It would be really easy for me to sit here and be a smug academic killjoy and ruin everybody's fun and pierce the excitement which is going around surrounding the new Bond film by pointing out how ridiculous it is and doing one of those boring fact versus fiction pieces, pointing out the areas in which it diverges quite outrageously from reality, which of course it does in many ways. But I think sometimes it's more interesting to talk about similarities maybe, or even the role that James Bond has had in terms of boosting the prestige of the British intelligence services, which have long held a reputation for being amongst the best, the most professional, the most successful, the most glamorous, and even the most mysterious in the world. So there are, interestingly, some similarities between Bond and real life. I gather that in the current film, Bond is fighting against a criminal organisation known as Spectre, and transnational organised crime has formed quite a high priority for MI6 since the end of the Cold War, when the Soviet Union was in demise and Britain's intelligence agencies were looking for some new targets to monitor. And so they have been focusing quite a lot on criminal networks, and they've also been developing lots of interesting gadgets in order to counter these networks. But one of the big differences to raise is that these interesting gadgets, which do exist, do not kill people. MI6 does not have gadgets to kill people. They do have some interesting gadgets, though, and some dirty tricks involving things like ways to write false blog posts pretending to be somebody in order to incriminate them or to try and sow disaffection amongst their ranks. They have technology to hack in and change people's profile pictures on Facebook and that kind of thing. This is not just MI6, of course. It's MI6 in conjunction with GCHQ, Britain's Signals Intelligence Agency. They have ability to blitz and spam terrorist and organized criminal phone networks in order to try and disrupt these networks. So organized crime is an area in which the intelligence services are currently facing, but they're not going around killing people. And in fact, one of the big things about Bond is this so-called license to kill. And I think it's worth just dwelling on this for a second and asking, does MI6 really have a license to kill? The answer, of course, is not in the way that James Bond seems to make out that he does. Very interestingly, Richard Dearlove, who was the chief of MI6 during the time of the Iraq War, gave some evidence to the inquiry into the death of Princess Diana. And you'll remember that there were all sorts of rumours about establishment figures assassinating Diana. And he was asked if MI6 had a license to kill. And interestingly, he said, well, kind of yes. We are allowed to use lethal force. Although, he added as a big caveat that he'd never seen it done ever in his entire time inside MI6. So technically, they do have some sort of ability to use lethal force, but crucially, this has to be signed off by the Foreign Secretary to whom they report. So you cannot have officers going around the world, James Bond style, bumping off anybody who crosses them. There was one interesting incident, though, during the Falklands War, when MI6 came quite close to having a license to kill, which was Britain was on the verge of victory, but there was a very dangerous missile called the Exocet missile, which was French-made and was in the process of being transported from France through various arms traders to Argentina. And MI6, in conjunction with the French intelligence services, had the very James Bond-style job of hunting down these Exocet missiles and basically bumping off anybody who was standing in their way. And in fact, one British MI6 officer said at the time that it was a closest thing to a license to kill that he'd ever had. So MI6 does not have, of course, a license to kill in the Bondian sense, but there have been some interesting similarities in its recent past. And then finally, I'll just say, James Bond has boosted the international prestige of the British intelligence services. Since Ian Fleming first started writing his books, they have drawn a wide readership within the American equivalent, within the CIA. Back in the 60s and 70s, American intelligence officers would read the James Bond books and say, why can't we have these gadgets? Where are these things? Why haven't our men been developing these new technical innovations? Of course, they were 99% fiction, but the Americans saw it as something that the British could do, and it boosted British prestige in American eyes. And even now, the American intelligence agencies still hold MI6 in quite high regard. And one of the reasons, one could argue, is because of the cultural significance of Bond. On a similar note, there was a story which I was told. An MI6 officer was going into an African country to make contact with some rebel groups whom MI6 were trying to support. And he'd never been there before, and he didn't quite know what the reception would be. He was quite nervous. He'd done some cultural research. He'd learned some of the language. And he touched down in this particular region and was escorted to a tribal leader. And quite nervously walked into this room, not quite sure the reception he'd receive. And the tribal leader looks at the MI6 officer, opens his arm wide and says, "Ah, Mr. Bond, come on in." And from there, the relations were already off to a good start. So we can see there are interesting examples of Bond having an effect in the real world.